Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome to Beyond the Spin. We are here with Karen Brown, joining us from Alabama, news reporter at WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama, Arnold Penn, general manager at WFTE in Moscow, Pennsylvania. Karen and Arnold, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This
great to be here.
Great to have you both. So I know you both watched last night.
Yes.
Of course. What else would we be doing?
Yes.
I'm curious, first of all, Karen, let me start with you and what the reaction was that you've heard from the community in Montgomery, Alabama, from listeners at WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama. Give me some of the initial reactions you've heard around your area.
Well, I think the reaction that we heard here in Montgomery was the same reaction that was heard pretty much nationally. I constantly checked my Facebook page throughout the debates last night. And, of course, there was a lot of laughter about the whole I like Big Bird comments. But people were really concerned that Obama seemed to be really disconnected, that he was not the president that we were used to seeing. I think during the first few minutes and at the end of the debate, we saw the Obama that we've always come to know and really resonate with, which is very confident, very composed, really having command of the issues. But the middle part, people just felt he really and truly was not there. On the other hand, of course, Romney just seemed to be selling throughout the whole process. Still, a lot of people say he was still the very vague Romney that he's always been, but he seemed to be really confident and smooth and collected, maybe as though he stole a little of that Obama and inserted it within himself, and he seemed to really and truly deliver. And he also seemed to really try and connect with the middle class, really harboring on the whole burying issue and the burying of the middle class. And I even heard someone say he seemed human and relatable for the first time.
Arnold, how about in Moscow?
Yeah, well, you know, we've had some mixed stuff looking at my personal Facebook and looking at the station's Facebook. We've had a mix of responses and talking to certain people in the area. A lot of people have been asking how it was possible that Romney was able to lie for so long, and why Obama really couldn't take command of the situation. I've actually heard people use the term he seemed to be playing the nice guy in reference to Mr. Obama. And it appeared to me that Mr. Obama had a few opportunities to really put Mitt in his place and set the record straight and get the facts orientated correctly. And I think there were some definite missed opportunities. I think that's from both fans and people who don't like him. It's been pretty much what we've heard all day.
Well, I mean, Alabama, we were broadcasting from, Karen, is a red state.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
for Romney.
and up in Pennsylvania is a swing state. This is a battleground with issues around voter suppression and other issues that that we talked about last time you were on the show, Arnold.
Yes.
That you're battling in Pennsylvania. The question is, I mean, how does this affect? Do you think people sense of this? I mean, when you saw that Governor Mitt Romney was talking about the $750 billion that is being taken out of Medicare, he said it several times.
Yes.
And it seemed, Arnold, the President Obama could not respond. I mean, you've heard his surrogates responding to that issue across the country, but he couldn't challenge it.
It was very sad to watch that one aspect, and it's a very, very sad thing because that particular dollar amount is if not the exact amount that Mr. Ryan has as part of his pen cuts. So it's kind of funny how you can watch politicians throw dollar amounts and brands around like that. Well, you did it. No, well, you did it. It's just kind of amazing that, it's like a high school debate at the presidential level. It's kind of scary, really.
I mean, and I know that, Karen, in Alabama and of course in the African-American communities, President Obama, has 98% of the vote. Mm-hmm. But when I was on Facebook last night tweeting throughout the debate, and then hundreds of people back and forth on our Facebook page, it was clear that across our vast multiracial spectrum on that are part of this programming on Facebook, we're really baffled. I mean, and some people actually thought, and I see what you think about this, that that the President Barack Obama that came through last night was the President Barack Obama that people thought were too many times compromised rather than fought before he compromised during his 3 years.
Exactly. And I was listening to one of my Facebook friends who is an Obama loyalist, and he even gave Mitt Romney a couple of high fives, if I can use that phrase, with some of the responses he made and was on that very same line of thinking that you were talking about. But I want to go back to that $716 billion
revenue. Sure, please do.
Yeah, coming out of Medicare, because when I was looking at some of the fact-checking that took place post the debate, that actually $716 billion, if Obama had come back and fought for that, that number was actually a compliment to him, according to some of the fact-checking that took place. I understand that Medicare's chief actuary said that those reforms will actually help improve Medicare, and those reforms are looking at some cuts down the line. So I think if Obama had kind of jumped in there in that conversation, then he really and truly would have taken back command of that $716 billion number. But you mentioned something earlier about Alabama being red, and I said, you know, red for Romney. When I watched that debate last night, I looked at it from the perspective of people in my state. How will the people of Alabama resonate with what both Romney and Obama said? And there were a number of issues that Obama raised that most Alabamians think hurt what we do here, whether it's coal or whether it was race to the top funding and those types of things that we don't benefit from here in Alabama. And I'm sure we'll probably get into more details on that a little bit later on. But I was really like the fact that you mentioned about Alabama's stance. Now, initially, during the 2008 race, Obama took Alabama during the primary, but that was just a primary vote, and that was then. But, of course, on the final vote, it did not go in favor of Obama. And it is expected that, once again, of course, Alabama will be red for Romney, so much so that Republicans in the state have actually sent their forces on the ground from in Alabama to other states to help use the techniques that were used here successfully in our local and state races and use those same techniques in other states for Romney.
And there are issues, Arnold, also that were not brought up, that I was kind of shocked since it was a domestic debate. We didn't hear anything, whether it was a kind of a push about the 47% or banned capital, none of that came up. Immigration, marriage equality, all the things that were at the convention. Issues that kind of about the Supreme Court, gas prices, none of these things came up. The issue of poverty, the only time you heard the word poverty raised in this debate last night was when Mitt Romney raised it.
And that's what resonated with me, because I used to be a public policy analyst for an anti-poverty organization, and I kept waiting to hear about those more than 40 million Americans, one in six, who are in poverty. What's the plan to move them from poverty to the middle class? There was all this conversation about the middle class and the upper class, but the whole those more than 40 million Americans who are below the poverty line, they were completely lost in last night's debate. And I was waiting for that and waiting for that and never heard any solution for that large group of people. Only Governor Romney saying that the numbers on the food stamp rolls have escalated and the numbers of people out of jobs have escalated. There was no plan to move those people from poverty to a higher income.
The only reason why Romney mentioned food stamps is it's basically just because he's, you know, playing to the reactionary Fox News crowd. He's not addressing that in "I care about those people." That was a simple, basically like a dog whistle. You know, it's just, the real facts on food stamps is what, 60%+ of recipients of food stamps are actually white. So that whole, you know, he's a food stamp president thing is really a sad and miserable way to make a race issue out of something that's basically just we have poor people, they need help. Doesn't matter what color they are, doesn't matter where they are. Poverty needs to be addressed in this country, and I think if people were educated about the real numbers and the real effects, something would actually be done about it.
But how much do you think the problem this debate was that President Barack Obama may have had a hard time defending his first 3 years in certain ways? I mean, whether it's the health care bill that was essentially a Republican health care bill that was written in the 90s and was just kind of revamped and now is called Obamacare,
with no public option. I mean, Obamacare, as much as you can paint it as a good thing, and it's better than nothing. It's a definite high point for him, but it is certainly not a perfect bill. And frankly, Medicare for All or a public option in some capacity thereof would have been much better than Obamacare as it's going to be implemented.
But even when you think about that particular part of President Barack Obama's administration, Karen Brown, I mean, during the campaign, he said that in 2008 that a public option would be part of his health care reform. And kind of rather than fight for it and say, well, we couldn't get it passed as Congress, but we still need it, we have to go with something, that didn't happen, it just got dropped. And I wonder if that's was part of the problem here is what people felt, some people felt who supported Barack Obama, that a constant compromise with Republicans before a fight took place is part of the problem.
And that's what I heard often. That was one of my concerns with the drop of the public option, because from what I heard from all the analysts, that was a key component of the health care bill, really providing the health care options that were needed to be beneficial to those who really, really needed some type of health care coverage. And I think when I was watching the president, watching his behavior, looking at his lips quiver and that type of thing, he almost seemed defeated. And that was the whole theme that I heard, a theme of concern throughout the whole debate. That he seemed defeated before he even got started. I heard another analyst say this morning that when you come out to fight, you come out to fight, and you don't hold back. This was a fight for his life, and to come in there being more appeasing to Mr. Romney as opposed to fighting for the job that he says he wants. He didn't do it, and he didn't deliver on that.
That was his job. His job was to come out and embarrass and shame and basically point the finger at Romney and say, every time Romney made a mistruth or tried to shame him, that was his opportunity to push him back in the corner. And, you know, remembering he is the president, remembering that he is dealing with someone who has basically had one way of being for 18 months, and then right before his very eyes is somebody else. It was definitely his opportunity to not hold back.
And that's true. I mean, he is the commander-in-chief. A lot of people said he was not the commander-in-chief last night. He was just someone they were taking part in a show.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that struck me was, and I thought would have been a pretty easy response, was when Governor Romney talked about he would create 11 to 12 million jobs. And I know that the president and others know this, that every kind of macroeconomic forecast, macroeconomic advisors and many others, are already forecasting there'll be 11.2 million jobs created between 2012 and 2016, low-paying jobs, but jobs. Mm-hmm. And that would have been like an easy retort.
A very easy retort. There were several easy retorts that Obama could have taken last night, and he did not. One of the things that's often baffled me in this whole conversation about, for instance, when people talk about the stimulus, and they say the stimulus did not create jobs. Okay, well, the stimulus may not have created jobs, but what did it do? What the stimulus did was that it saved jobs. I know here in Alabama, thousands of teacher jobs were saved. Thousands of state government services were saved because of the stimulus. So if it didn't do what the anticipated effect was, what did it do? And that's what Mr. Obama, in a lot of conversations that I've heard, failed to do. He failed to talk about things that did happen as opposed to letting Mr. Romney run with what did not happen.
As a reporter, don't you feel, though, maybe you see it, that the spin machine works so hard to discredit anything he does, and so many of the positive things, as you just pointed out, so many of the positive things that did occur from the stimulus and other things that he's done really don't get mentioned. It's not that we see it in a national sense every day. We hear how bad he is every day.
Mm-hmm.
We're beaten with that everywhere you turn on the dial, whether it's TV or radio. But we never hear the positives. No one ever articulates the positives, pretty much ever.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. I think about what was the story that came out today, the comment on the KitchenAid tweet network when someone tweeted about a very negative comment about Mr. Obama's grandmother, her passing away a couple of days before the election because she knew it was going to be that bad. how low can the attack get against Mr. Obama?
That's really bad.
It's an all-time low.
Yeah.
So I wonder, before we wind up our conversation together here, what your thoughts are about these debates we're having, and that none of the small parties were involved. There's been a lot of talk about that on some stations around the National Federation of Community Broadcasters.
We carried the Democracy Now! Version, which was the was 3 hours, and what they did was they had the question was asked to Romney and Obama. They responded, and then that broadcast was paused, and Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson were allowed to participate in real time. And we aired that for the full duration for 3 hours.
Hmm.
And that, I have to say, listening and watching to the regular one,
yeah,
and listening and coming in and out of what we were doing, is very, very good to see. Now, you can't vote for the Green Party if you're in a swing state, because your vote has to go one way or the other, because you don't want to be have the Nader effect, okay? But basically, the Green Party and the Constitution Party bring such a brush of fresh air to the subject. I mean, it's because, the Democratic Party is basically a soft Republican Party. It's a soft right. It's a very conservative thing versus how it used to be, where you had the dividing line between, a Democrat and a Republican. Now it's kind of like, radical right and soft right.
So
the Greens and whatever, the Constitution Party, whatever, their perspectives were so different and so like what Americans need, so like what would help us not be a sad laughing stock for the rest of the world.
So
that I was proud as a station manager to air the Democracy Now! Version.
Before we have to take a break, I just want to hear Karen's take.
Go ahead.
First of all, I applaud you all for doing that, and I think with the large number of independent voters out there, we need to know what the other sides of the coins are saying, so that those who represent the two mainstream parties can pull from that and figure out how they're going to wrangle in those independent voters and those other voices that don't agree with either the Democratic or Republican Party.
I want to thank you both. This has been great. Karen Brown, news reporter at WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama. Please hope you join us again soon.
I plan to. Thank you.
It was great having you with us. Glad you're part of our team here. And Arnold Prenn, general manager of WFTE in Moscow, Pennsylvania. Always great to have you with us, and we look forward to doing this again with you too, Arnold.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thank you both. We're going to take a very brief break, and then we're going to talk to a couple more red states coming up here. Heather Nadei is going to join us from West Virginia, where she's news director at Allegheny Highlands, Allegheny Mountain Radio. And Michael Chmielewski will join us, who is from KVRF in Palmer, Alaska. Stay with us. We'll be right back here on Beyond the Spin as we continue our look at last night's debate. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back to Beyond the Spin. We continue our conversation about last night's election. We are going to different parts of these United States today to talk to our sister stations, the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. We have with us Heather Nadei, who is news director and host of the Noon Hour magazine at Allegheny Mountain Radio, serving the Allegheny Highlands of Virginia and West Virginia, and Michael Chmielewski, chief operating officer at KVRF in Palmer, Alaska, and former city council member in Palmer, Alaska as well. And Michael and Heather, welcome. It's good to have you both with us.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Thank you. Same here.
You sound really close. You sound like you're almost next door, Michael.
We are. We're just a short distance away.
So I'm curious from both your perspectives, and Michael, we haven't had you on the show with us yet, and we welcome you to Beyond the Spin, and glad our show is up there in Alaska. And I'm curious about what responses you've gotten and heard around the coffee in the morning or late in the evening after this debate. What have been the responses in Parma, Alaska?
Well, I've wandered about, and I wander because I live downtown, and I walk across the city, a very small city, to the studio in the morning, so I have a chance to stop in coffee houses. I've gone to a variety of meetings. I've picked up both before the debate and afterwards a kind of less than enthusiastic interest in actually both watching and thinking that it would actually have some effect upon individuals' opinions. So first of all, I have to say that we're somewhat distanced, and as a result, there was a lack of enthusiasm, which was surprising to me.
Among everybody who listened to it on both sides?
Yes, and I did note today, especially after the fact of the debate, and attended a variety of meetings, and I heard from particularly those people who might be termed Republican sympathizers, supporters, and so on. They thought, and many others have had a similar feeling, that Mr. Romney did a pretty good job,
mm-hmm.
surprisingly good job. So I think if you were looking at people who had a particular bent, they've already made their decision, then I think they were happy. I think other people that I spoke to who might have been more supportive of the president were quieter. But it's that great group of in between that I'm not sure that they paid much attention, at least as I wandered about and I said, okay, you haven't made a decision yet. And they would say yes. And I said, well, you're going to look at this thing? You're going to watch this debate? And they would say, well, no, I don't think so.
Heather Nadei, how about in your part of West Virginia, which I knew was, I know it's red, but I also know that it's a county that part of it went for Barack Obama before, but has changed their minds because people seem like they're not being paid attention to. How was a debate received there?
Well, I've had similar experiences. Some of the older folks, some did watch, some didn't. Some of the older folks in our community seem to be, they're much, much more conservative, so they are much more leaning towards Romney already. I spoke to one 40-something woman this morning who is a, by her own admission, a conservative Christian woman. She's pro-life, does not like the president, doesn't like his policy on abortion, doesn't like his policy on gay marriage, and she's one of those ones that's pretty set in her opinion that she's already pretty much made up her mind how she's going to vote, so these debates probably aren't going to sway her one way or another. But what was very nice to see today was talking to younger folks who you might not think would tune in, were tuning in, and they were paying very close attention to what was being said on both sides, and I find that very, very encouraging. Now. I've heard a lot of pundits over the day, course of the day saying, well, Romney clearly was the winner in that debate last night, if you wanted to declare a winner, because he was so much more aggressive and out there. And the other point they bring up about that is, well, you know, expectations for him were pretty low, so he could only go up in that regard. but I've also heard from some young people who have said, no, I think Mr. Obama won the debate because of the way he presented himself and the fact that he didn't bring up the 47%, that he didn't go on the attack, and they appreciated that he didn't go on the attack. So that was kind of interesting as well.
That is interesting. I'm curious what you think was missing from this debate. I mean, what there are a lot of people who looked at this debate, and you've seen a lot of analysts pro-Obama and pro-Romney, talking about what was not in this debate, I mean, in terms of the other issues facing America. And I wonder if, and some people have argued that there should have been other parties in this debate. Some stations actually, we just talked to, a few minutes ago, talked to Arnold Prin, general manager of WFTE up in Moscow, Pennsylvania. And what they did was that they played the presidential debate between the two men, but then added in Democracy Now!'s debate to hear the voices of two smaller parties in between the segments. And some people thought that was missing. I'm curious what you all, Michael, thought it was missing, and how did you handle the debate on your station last night?
Well, the interesting, let me answer that by saying what I thought was missing was something from each of the candidates that would be useful for someone who is trying to make up their mind and get an additional picture of who these guys are in order to decide what they were going to do with their vote. I know that a large newspaper in New York did an editorial which said to the effect that the debates were not helpful. And you were talking just a bit earlier about did Obama win, did Romney win? And my sense about it, what was missing was the whole point that, yes, if you were a supporter, you were looking to be able to clap and say, yeah, my guy really, really took him down here. But that's talking to all those people who have already made their minds up.
Right, right.
So if these debates are going to have an effect on the other people, it's not about winning in this case, who scored the last basket. It's more about, is there something that they're saying now that gives a better picture of who they are, and to be able to connect the dot between this time before the election happens and afterwards when you're projecting and saying, okay, we know that people are different before, during a campaign, before the election, and then afterwards things change. Well, personally, I believe that's what a lot of people are looking for. Can I get a hint here of how this candidate is going to be if they're elected? And what I think many people were saying, and those who were saying they weren't going to look at the debate, is that in the past they have not found that this has been helpful in that regard. So I think that arguably was missing from this debate as well. There wasn't new information. It was maybe a prettier presentation if somebody were to talk about debate style, but that's not enough to build, I think, support for a vote.
Heather Nadei?
I would agree with that, because I know for myself personally, and I think, and I suspect for others, me in the same boat, I consider myself a moderate Democrat, but I have crossed party lines before to vote for another candidate if I thought he was the right candidate. So I voted for Obama in 2008. I went into this debate last night thinking, you know, I'm one of those ones that happily voted for him in 2008, but he hasn't lived up to my expectations in many ways. So I kind of am looking to Mr. Romney, okay, give me a reason, persuade me that you're the right candidate to vote for. So I want to hear specifics. I don't want to hear you tell me that you're going to create 12 million jobs if you're elected. I want you to tell me how you're going to create 12 million jobs. And I didn't hear that from him last night. I heard a little more specifics from President Obama, but there again, not as much specifics as I would like to hear.
So this is curious and interesting to me, because I think that I know that when we talked before, Heather, we talked about how people in your community, many voted for Barack Obama in 2008, and it's a white working class community.
Right.
In the mountains of West Virginia and Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
People are disgruntled about that now. As a matter of fact, many of them voted for the guy who was in prison during the primary.
Yeah, yeah.
And not for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious from both of you, starting with you, Heather, and then go to Michael, what is it you think people in your communities are looking for? What do they want to hear? What's missing? What do they want to hear?
Well, I turned that around a little bit.
All right, go ahead.
It's not so much what they want to hear.
Uh-huh.
I believe we're in a show me stage. What can you show me? That's what people are looking toward. Give me a show me that convinces me that you're the guy. And part of this is showing by what, not so much a person is saying as they're going from place to place or in the debate, but some specific actions that some people are doing. Now, the president has an advantage here in some respects, because he's doing presidential things. So even in this time, and the remaining few weeks before the election actually happens, is there something that he can demonstrate that would convince people. Romney has a slightly different task because he's not in office. But, you know, when people give you the example, which has been discussed over and over again, has to do with his tax returns. He talks about the tax returns, but the show me might be, okay, if you required your vice president to show you his returns over a lengthy period of time, how about just doing it, show us your tax returns? And that will stop the talking and be in action.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is probably within reach, but I'm not sure that that's going to happen.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Heather?
I would agree with that, yeah. And I think that goes back to what I was saying, is it's not enough to tell us what you want to do or what you plan to do. It's you need to demonstrate. As Michael says, you need to show people what you're going to do. Because otherwise, it's almost like you're kind of being asked to vote on blind faith, which I mentioned that to somebody else this morning, and they said, but isn't that what Mr. Obama's message was back in 2008? And I thought, well, yeah, touche. So, yeah.
So, go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
One of the things I heard today, I was having coffee in a local coffee shop with a variety of people, and they reminded that the worst line that anyone can use is "trust me" when you're a candidate. And I think in one way or another, some of the expressions are just that. Whether it's Mr. Romney who's saying "trust me," when I am in office, I'll do something. Or Mr. Obama, who's a little more lightly, but he's still saying the same thing. Trust me, I started down this path. You need to stay with me for the rest of the next 4 years. And that's that doesn't inspire confidence in a lot of people. Maybe just let me throw something else
please
out
do,
to you.
Please do, please do.
Because I live in a little town in Alaska, not far from another little town in Alaska by the name of Wasilla.
No, wait a minute, Michael. Who's from Wasilla?
I'm trying to remember. But
Sarah,
4 years ago, we became the focus, and we're 10 miles away. So we had this explosive situation where all the attention was devoted to someone that most of us had known in one respect, and suddenly we watched an individual catapulted onto the national scene and flare brightly there for a bit, and so I think I've stated this in other places, we're just coming out of our recovery mode here, and so when we look at this particular campaign, we see it somewhat differently. And the reference I want to make is that prior to the selection by John McCain of his running mate, there was an interesting and very extensive Obama campaign structure being set up here in Alaska. Alaska has, in many ways, had a reputation as being pretty much a Republican state. But there was things were looking okay. As soon as that decision was made to select Sarah Palin, Obama left. The campaign left, basically, because I think probably an appropriate decision that this was going to be a hometown advantage that you weren't going to be able to deal with, and you want to put your energies elsewhere. Fast forward 4 years, this is still a state that checked off in the R column, but with a huge number of very independent people. And I think the largest number of voters in this state are independent. And at this point, they really are so independent that they're looking at checking off a box that they would hope would appear that would say none of the above.
Is that on your ballot in Alaska?
No, it isn't, but it should be. It should be an only, and I'm not suggesting that I would vote that way. I'm suggesting it should be in order to catch
right.
Yeah, the flavor of people's attitudes.
And I think probably the same feelings in West Virginia. And we're talking to, you just heard Michael Maluski, who is a chief operating officer at KVRF in Palmer, Alaska, down the road from Wasilla. Former, I had to throw that in since you said it. Former city council member at Palmer in Palmer, Alaska. Heather Nade is with us. She's news director and host of the Noon Hour magazine at Allegheny Mountain Radio, serving the Allegheny Highlands of Virginia and West Virginia. As you're listening here to Beyond the Spin, I'm Mark Steiner, and we're talking to our sister stations all across the country, part of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. We're also now going to be joined by Elizabeth DiNovella. Elizabeth DiNovella is culture editor for Progressive Magazine, joining us live from the Obama campaign stop in Madison, Wisconsin, where they've been tweeting madly about Obama's stop here. And Elizabeth DiNovella, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I also volunteer at WORT Radio, Madison's non-commercial radio station, too.
We heard, and you used to work there,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah,
they're on our.
Yeah.
They're with us a great deal. So,
it's
a pleasure to have you with us. So,
yeah.
Tell us about this rally that just took place with President Barack Obama and how different it was or was not from the President Barack Obama the nation saw last night.
No, 30,000 people gathered at Bascom Hall on UW's campus here in downtown Madison, and there was a threat of rain, but it ended up being a beautiful day, and it was almost cinematic when the sun came out. When President Obama finished his speech, President Obama started his speech talking about that some of you might have heard that we had a debate yesterday, and I met this spirited guy called Mitt Romney, and talking about the difference between the Mitt Romney on the campaign trail and the Mitt Romney that showed up last night. But at the same time, you could kind of make the same argument for President Obama today. He gave a very spirited speech. He had great one-liners, and so many people were wondering, where was this President Obama last night during the debate?
So. I'm sorry, finish up, but it just made me laugh. Go ahead.
Right. So, one of the things that he said that, the real Mitt Romney said we don't need any more teachers in the classroom, but the Mitt Romney last night said that he loved teachers, and the crowd started to boo, and Obama said, don't boo, vote. And that really, I think, goes to the heart of one of the reasons why he came here was to promote early voting here in Wisconsin. People are able to start voting on October 22nd. And so they would really use the rally to sort of get people to vote early. In the recent polls that came out this week, President Obama is ahead of Mitt Romney. And interesting, we're going to see people who will be voting for President Obama who also voted for Governor Walker earlier this year. So we definitely will have some crossover voting.
Why do you think that is?
I think part of it has to do with both our incumbents. I think that was a big reason for why Governor Walker was able to win. His numbers really didn't change that much from when he had won 2 years earlier. And if you talk to people who supported Governor Walker this year and voted for him, they said, look, just let the guy finish out his term. Even people who somewhat disagree with his policies told me that they just felt that he should finish out his term. So I think that people like incumbents, and I think that's why you're going to see people who will vote for Obama and vote for Romney. At the same time, this is also a state where people voted for former Senator Russ Feingold and George Bush. So that's just how Wisconsin is sometimes.
And as the old man in the group, I remember when Wisconsin gave almost 30% or more of its vote to George Wallace of Alabama.
There you go. And I think it's just part of Wisconsin's political history. And I see you really see that happening right now is that it sort of has a real populist sort of streak. And sometimes the streak goes right wing and sometimes the streak goes left wing. So, it's the state of Russ Feingold. And it's also the state of Paul Ryan. They're both from the same town of Janesville, Illinois. And I think that's just part of Wisconsin's political history.
So I'm going to ask the three of you this question. Heather and Michael, you're still with us, correct?
Yes, we are.
Cool.
Yes.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
And so you all represent really kind of independent territories in some way, mm-hmm. all three of these places. And there's a poll that I've talked about on previous episodes of Beyond the Spin that came out a couple of months back from Suffolk University. I don't know if you all saw it. But it talked about, it interviewed the 90 million unlikely voters, 10 million more than 4 years ago, by the way. And of that group, 43% said that they would vote for Barack Obama if they voted, but 23% said they would vote independent if they voted. Now, whatever that means. And 14% said for Governor Mitt Romney. But I'm curious because you all are in areas where there's a powerful independent streak. Some self-identified progressives in Wisconsin, but independents without identifying politically. And I wonder how that independence plays out in what people care about, think about, and how they participate or don't participate in the world that you live in. Because I think there's a huge streak of that in America, but it doesn't get play because it seems, in a way, Michael, they have no place to go.
Well, let me just throw this out to you. We recently, this past Tuesday, had what are local elections. That's the local borough equivalent to counties and local cities. We had the turnout the lowest in memory. And I'm talking 15% of those people registered to vote voted. And that we're talking about the mayor, school board seats, and this is the large school board, you know, school district, 17,000 students, et cetera, et cetera. 15% people, and this was with some pretty heavy, in some cases, campaigning being done. In the discussion we had on our morning show this morning was one of the analysts that looks at this stuff. We talked about something that comes in from the side, and that's nationwide. And it's my belief right now that people are ever more distracted. And what happens when you get all of the campaigning that goes on, the traditional stuff, even expanding into social media, is just getting so much noise that people basically say, this too much, and they opt out.
And I wonder, Elizabeth, how you see that. I mean, you work for Progressive Magazine. There is a huge progressive movement in Wisconsin that's very independent. How do you view that?
Well, I think one of the things that you really saw play out in this polarization we've seen in Wisconsin, which is, I mean, this polarization is happening nationally, as you said. And what you see in Wisconsin is that I think the economy plays a big role in this. And right now, when you look at the last couple years that people have been voting, you really have these different sections of the state that are either very blue and Democratic, such as Madison, Wisconsin, where I'm at, and Dane County, and you have these very red areas, such as Waukesha and the areas that surround Milwaukee. And when Governor Walker was campaigning the last couple years, he was able to sort of really hit on the sort of urban-rural divide that you see in a place like Wisconsin. And so he could go after school teachers for having health insurance. And in these small towns where many people don't have the high-paying jobs they used to have because manufacturing is just abysmal in Wisconsin right now. Wisconsin is not like Ohio. Manufacturing, the auto industry, is not coming back in the same way. So you have people who are state workers or who have teachers who have decent benefits, and Governor Walker is able to say, well, it's the haves versus the have-nots, and the haves are people who have benefits and pensions. And it really speaks to the real problems that we have with our economy, especially in a state like Wisconsin, where, again, these high-paying jobs with Harley-Davidson or the GM plant in Janesville were able to sustain communities and the middle class, and now those jobs are just gone, and they're not coming back. And so I think that has to do with that sort of economic anxiety that people feel, I think, has something to do with they want lower taxes and how they vote.
Heather, we have about a minute to break. I'd like to, that stands for West Virginia, which is another independent place.
Yes. And I would agree with Elizabeth. We're looking at the same kind of thing. I think the economy has a great deal to do with how people are feeling right now. And, of course, West Virginia, being a coal state,
right,
I've been seeing a whole lot more of the Friends of Coal signs around the area than I used to see, you know, and to the point even that we've got a couple of a senator and a congressman, both Democrats, who are running for reelection and have taken pains to try to distance themselves from the White House because of this perception that Mr. Obama's administration wants to shut down the coal industry in West Virginia, and of course that's one of the lifebloods of the state. So, you know, I think that's part of the thing, of the idea that's kind of turned this from what used to be a very blue state into a red state.
So I think I would agree that's what people are thinking right now and what they're feeling. And they're voting their economics right now.
I want to thank you. This has been fascinating. And Heather Nadeau, news director and host of Noon Hour Magazine at Allegheny Mountain Radio, serving Allegheny Highlands of Virginia, West Virginia. Michael Maluski from Palmer, Alaska, where he's chief operating officer of KVRF and former city council member. And Elizabeth DiNovella, who was covering Obama speaking in Madison, Wisconsin, culture editor for the Progressive Magazine. And also contributes to WORT, one of our sister stations in Madison, Wisconsin. Thank the three of you so much. It's really been a fascinating dialogue.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Yep. Enjoyed it.
Talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Folks, I want to thank you all for listening to Beyond the Spin. I'm Mark Steiner, and I want to thank all of our guests today, Arnold Prehn, Karen Brown, Heather Nadeau, Michael Maluski, and Elizabeth DiNovella, and all of you for listening across the country. I'm Mark Steiner for Beyond the Spin, and we're broadcasting from WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore, Maryland, on the campus of Morgan State University. For Beyond the Spin, stay with us. We'll be back next week. Beyond the Spin is a production of the Center for Emerging Media and WEAA, produced in association with the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. Our producer is Justin Levy. Our engineer at Center for Emerging Media is Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Please contact us with your thoughts and ideas, feedback, questions, or suggestions for Beyond the Spin at beyondthespin@gmail.com or facebook.com/beyondthespin. Or go to steinershow.org. You can hear a podcast of today's show. And for Beyond the Spin, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.